You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Ko te reo te Māori o te mana Māori, Tihe Māori Ora. This month is a very special landmark for te reo Māori as a language, as it is 30 years since te reo became an official language of New Zealand. It was in August 1987 that the Māori Language Act came into force, making the reo an official language after years of it being stigmatised, banned and neglected. Until the mid-19th century, te reo Māori was the predominant language spoken in Aotearoa. However, as more English speakers arrived, it was increasingly confined to Māori communities. By the mid-20th century, there were concerns that the language was even dying out. In 1985, the Waitangi Tribunal heard the te reo Māori claim. This asserted that te reo was a taonga that the government was obliged to protect under the Treaty of Waitangi. The Waitangi Tribunal found in favour of the claimants and recommended a number of legislative and policy remedies. Of these, the most important was the Māori Language Act, which made Māori an official language of New Zealand and established the Māori Language Commission. In 2013, there were around 125,000 speakers of Māori in New Zealand, representing about 21% of the Māori population and 3% of all New Zealanders. Conversations around the place of te reo have risen in recent years, especially about it being taught in schools, with many arguing that it should become a compulsory subject. Meanwhile, more and more free te reo courses have popped up, with courses at Unitec, AUT and elsewhere proving very popular with people keen to learn the language. So where to now with te reo? Te reo Māori advocate and one of the cornerstones of the Kohanga Reo movement, Dame Iritana Tawhiwhirangi, says the language has come a long way in 30 years, but that there is still a long way to go. I had the privilege of speaking to Dame Iritana about the 30th anniversary and why te reo is important. It was a massive struggle, of course, to get te reo recognised as an official language across many decades, wasn't it?
It was a huge struggle, but again, you know, I think that if there had been more understanding dialogue rather than polarised, we could have made advances a lot earlier. But I think New Zealand's come a long way. So it's like any country, where you've come to is always poses questions of where to next. But I think that, you know, what it did, not just for Māori, but I think what it did for the country, you know, and we're all shareholders of this country, I think we need to understand that to be different is not to be wrong. And I think there was a view at the time that Māori language was wrong because it wouldn't get you anywhere, and you know, those sorts of statements help to make relationships much less ready to proceed.
What role did you have in promoting the language and bringing it to prominence back then?
Oh, well, it was interesting, Sam, because my background is ex-teaching, and then I was pushed into Māori affairs by Māori elders from my tribe in Ngāti Pro, who sort of felt that going into a government department, and particularly in the Department of Māori Affairs, would help to just lift the focus on Māori development in a Māori cultural framework, all that sort of thing.
Mm.
So I went into it against my better judgment, I might add. So I went into the Department of Māori Affairs, and at the time in Māori Affairs, Māori language, you know, the Māori people, the Māori Women's Welfare League, the New Zealand Māori Council, Ngāta Matua, there was a lot of a reaction about a Māori language not being given the recognition, I guess, that it should have. Now, the reason for that, Sam, is that in the earlier years, our old people, they weren't worried about the Māori language because it was endemic. It was in them. Recognizing the language as an official language, what did it do? It made Māori people feel, oh, we are being valued. You know, that was a breakthrough. Even though it happened against quite a lot of resistance. But you know, nothing gained if you don't believe in what you're doing.
Do you think the language has become more embraced by the wider New Zealand public since it's become an official language?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll tell you why. When I was given the job, I was asked to drive the focus on the revival of Māori language in a cultural context. And the simple statement, I don't know whether you know, but it's pretty widely known now, Sam. The simple statement made by the elders at Lower Hutt at Waifetu Marae in 1981, they simply said, we've got to stop relying on the government to address our language. They try, but their focus is mostly on academic results, on the grammar, etc. But we want to be able to converse with our grandchildren.
Mm.
And so what they said there, in a simple statement, they said, we have got to take responsibility ourselves and start by addressing the children as soon as they're born, put them to the breast and start speaking. We actually have little faith in the people. We've got a mentality that I call a fix-it mentality, and it's worldwide, so that all the professionals, all governments, government agencies, and, you know, all are hell-bent on fixing people's lives. And the minute we do it, we are de-dignifying them. We are, you know, taking away their purpose, their hope, and above all, we're taking away their responsibility. So Kohanga Reo are focused on going back and enabling those parents. They didn't know how, we would work with them, but we wouldn't do it for them. And that's a big difference. And that's what happened. And then the language just flew. Once you value people, watch them fly. Mm. I remember David Longley saying to me at the time, after 2 years, he said, what magic are you using to move Maoridom this way? Because it did move across the country and internationally. I said, I didn't move them. I didn't do it. They moved themselves. I said, once you can enable people, empower them and give them, a purpose, they'll go. I was criticized, can I just tell you this? I was criticized by them who always know better, Maori and non-Maori professionals and academics, who said at the time, when they knew that was where I was going, they said, what a stupid idea. Fancy going to families, they don't know how to manage. Isn't it interesting how we retain control and power?
Mm. Now, in recent times, we've seen a lot of conversation around the teaching of te reo in schools. What do you make of this conversation?
Well, it's like everything else, I guess. For me personally, and it's a very personal comment, I have all my life been averse to compulsion.
Mm.
I have. I think if you compel people, you build up resentment. And I mean, Maori people are hell-bent on making it compulsory. And I know why. Because, you know, they want to hurry up and just get Maori language so entrenched that it's there for the benefit of the whole nation. However, my experience has been that with compulsion comes a reaction and a resentment. I would much rather motivate people, excite them, and make them want to do it. And I think there is a way of doing that. So, a number of Maori people said to me, when I said that, said, oh, but we were compelled to learn English. And I said, yes, look what happened. There was a resentment from the time it happened right through. While we learned it, we were resenting it absolutely. Because compulsion does that. It can force you to do some things, but... So I prefer the other thing, Sam. I prefer to excite people and motivate them, make them want to learn, and to be able to understand, to walk in two universes. It's magic. It's magic.
Now, just finally, are you optimistic about the future of te reo in New Zealand for the next 30 years?
I am, not just from a Maori drive, but from a drive that I now see in non-Maori and even, you know, immigrants. I know of people who come who want to learn Maori as well. And you know, all the languages, for goodness sake, all the languages is to be able to, when you're speaking, you have the people that you're speaking to understand what the heck you're saying. That's really the crux of language. And so I am optimistic about the future, Sam. The last thing I want to say to you, when Kohanga started in 82 and these little groups of whānau were meeting, I had a phone call from Auckland from a group of about seven people, non-Maori, who asked me whether this was an initiative that non-Maori could be involved in. I said, absolutely. Absolutely. And I asked them why. Now, the people that spoke were lawyers and doctors and professional non-Maori. And when I asked them why, you know what they said? This was back in 1982. They said, we want our children in years ahead to be bilingual because I think that is, they said, that is where the future is going. Now, that's from non-Maori. So, you know, there's a lot of goodwill out there.
Mm.
But again, it's how you touch people's lives. You touch their lives to make them feel valued, they'll go. You touch them in a critical way, you're wasting your time.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.